Score, the podcast. The only show taking you inside the studios of the world's most celebrated composers and musical storytellers. Presented by Spitfire Audio.
I'm Kenny Holmes.
Hey, I'm Robert Kraft.
Also say hello to composer Carol.
Hello, hello.
This is Score the Podcast, and we are off and running after a huge season premiere episode with Danny Elfman. Thanks for all the feedback. Everyone seemed to really enjoy that conversation as much as we did. What a thrill that was. And we're right back with another big guest this week. He scored the 2020 Best Picture, Parasite. He also did the Netflix film Okja, both directed by Bong Joon-ho. He's Jae-il Jung. Jung Jae-il on paper. Jae-il Jung when you're speaking to him, I think. We'll clear that up.
Yeah, I think we got to ask him, is he called different things depending which side of the Pacific he's on? Because I think in Korea, you may go with the last name first. And in Los Angeles, the first thing you say is, how much am I getting paid?
I do want to point out, too, this is a unique episode for the season because we had a chance to meet up with Jae-il in person last month. He happened to be in town. He did a concert, which we'll talk about with him as well. But we spoke with him about, maybe 5 days before the stay-at-home travel, everything shut down. So he was able to get back home to South Korea, but we did sit down with him in person. So this is the one episode this season so far. I mean, if things change later on down the road and we're able to meet up with someone in person, great. But this is the one episode that we did in person, so it'll sound a little different, and the video clips that we post on our social media and stuff, you will see us in person. So we're not breaking the rules. This was done before the fact. But we're excited to talk with Jae-il about his great work on Parasite and a lot more to come with that. We do have to thank our sponsor before we get to anything, though, Robert.
Yeah, Spitfire. We're so lucky to have them because they're a great fit for our podcast because they make the tools that many of our guests use. Mm-hmm. I mean, they put together these libraries. One of the libraries that is extremely popular is the library they created when they worked with the estate of Bernard Herrmann and built a suite of all his sounds.
That's not the Spitfire sound. Don't worry. That's not what you'll get if you get the Bernard Herrmann Composer Toolkit.
I thought that was a Spitfire sample right there. But that's part of the Bernard Herrmann Composer Toolkit, those crazy psycho sounds. And you'll hear a demo at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
In case you have a horror film on the docket coming up, this is a library you might want to get.
We also want to mention Spitfire's new Composer Magazine. They do videos and written interviews with some of the composers of the biggest shows and movies, including shows like Ozark and Handmaid's Tale, which we love. And they recently did one with Justin Hurwitz from La La Land, who was a guest on our show last year.
But we don't want to forget the most important asset we can bring to the fabulous listeners of Score the Podcast.
What could you be talking about, Robert?
We have a deal for you.
We got a cookie for you is what we have.
We got a cookie for you. That's right. We got a cookie for you. And we have 20% off your first purchase. It's good on over 50 different Spitfire libraries. So you want to be sure to use the promo code SCORE2020. That's all one word. And it's a limited time offer. So you should get in there and use that promo code to elevate your music. Remember, it's SCORE2020. Lock and load.
Limited time. Don't wait. If you're waiting around, you're blowing it.
Yep. Yep.
Get it done. A little bit of news broke this week. Exciting news for Daft Punk fans. The director,
Face to Face,
Dario Argento, has a new film that he's, I guess, going to start working on called Black Glasses. And Daft Punk happens to be huge fans of his, and they are scoring the film. You know, their last film was Tron Legacy, they did with Joe Trapanese, and their last album was in 2013, Random Access Memories, which we talked about with Giorgio Moroder last season, and with Joe Trapanese on Tron. So if you're not caught up on season two of Score the Podcast and you're a Daft Punk fan, check those episodes out. But exciting time. And Robert, how sweet is that for a director to get a call from Daft Punk saying, hey, can we do it?
That's just awesome. I mean, first of all, Dario Argento, who is known to mostly an art house audience,
yeah,
just got the elevation that any director would dream of. And also just coolness factor. I mean, working with Daft Punk on a movie score, that's got to be awesome.
It's going to blow it up too, right? I mean, that they're bigger stars than the film will ever be.
Yeah, and for those of you that love documentaries, there's a new documentary that's been available for about 2 or 3 weeks, which is 20 years of Coachella. Mm. And it's been out there, and one of the highlights of the doc is the performance of Daft Punk at Coachella.
Did you go?
I was there. I was in the room, and it was a
face-to-face.
Yeah, it was so amazing. It was a life-changing performance for a lot of the people in the room, and they even mention in the documentary it's one of the most memorable and legendary moments in Coachella, because you have these two guys in helmets way at the end. We were in the back. They're way at the end of the tent. But, man, that tent was rocking. So to have them do a film score, I can't wait to hear it. I'm just interested to hear what they'll make.
Yeah. It'll be exciting. We didn't get to do this last week because we had so much to get to with Danny, and he thankfully went really long in the interview, which was fantastic. So many good anecdotes and stories in there. But we wanted to just kind of talk about what we've been watching. A lot of stuff. We had some time over our break, and also, there's just so many great things coming out now. Robert, what are you caught up on? What have you been watching? I know you mentioned one to me, and I wanted to save it for the show.
Yeah, first of all, one of the things I've been doing, because in my household, there's the best TV is in a big common area, and Daddy is requested, particularly if the show is violent or loud, to wear headphones. So the benefit of that, which is many, because then I can pretend when someone says, can you do the dishes? I'm just deeply involved in my show and I have the headphones on. I just didn't hear you. But I also have been getting to hear the mixes really carefully and the scores really carefully in headphones. I'm not sure how I'm going to go back to listening in speakers, because these shows that I've been watching, the music is so interesting. Of course, anybody's around me knows I've become obsessed with a series called Fauda, which is about an undercover police squad that travels between Israel and either the West Bank or the Gaza Strip in lots of missions, and there's good guys and bad guys, and you're never sure exactly who is which. But
and this is your headphones show.
It's requiring
headphones.
It's a lot of explosions and
oh, you just unplugged your microphone. Okay, Robert, are you okay? What happened there?
It's one of the perils of the Zoom combination recording situation. I survived it, but I must sit very, very still.
That's Robert has a problem sitting still. So this we're only on season 3, episode 2, Robert. We have a long way to go. You're going to have to.
Restless knee syndrome is not a good companion for all the things that are plugged into my computer.
Oh, this is amazing.
Because I knock one wire and see ya.
Anyway.
So where were we?
Fauda. Explosive, violent. We should watch it.
And loud. And watch it in headphones. But one of the great benefits of watching it in headphones is you get to hear an incredible score by a composer I wasn't familiar with. His name is Gilad Benamram, Benanram. I believe Benamram. He's an Israeli. Benamram. I believe he's an Israeli composer and clearly capable in both the world of orchestral composing and electronic composing, because part of the score is very emotionally string-based and orchestral, and part of it is really contemporary, propulsive beats and electronics. So he's great. The other shows that I'm watching, amazingly enough, also in headphones, are scored by the same composers. Both shows, Danny Bensey and Sonder Jurayens. They score Ozark, awesome season, and Outsider.
Oh, the Outsider was so good.
So scary and cool and freaky. And the music for both was incredible. And I can now tell you the mixes on both. Sound effects, music, dialogue. Super interesting in headphones. I recommend it. And the benefit is you don't end up doing the dishes until later in the evening.
How about, too, just really quick to mention that Jason Bateman has like stepped away from comedy completely and is now just like putting out fantastic drama and scary stuff. And just what range? I don't want to get too much into that. But
no, you're absolutely right. Because when you look up the credits, you realize it starts with produced by Jason Bateman, written by Jason Bateman, episode one directed by Jason Bateman. You think, wow.
Stars in the show for a bit.
And yeah, on camera.
I have been watching, first off, The Last Dance, which is the documentary series that ESPN and Netflix are doing on the Bulls' final season with Michael Jordan. Episodes 3 and 4 just ran on Sunday night. It's fantastic. They had a camera crew follow the Bulls for the whole final season and bank the video until now, which is just incredible. And I thought it was cool on Sunday, actually, there was a little montage of Jordan getting his rhythm, getting good, and they were playing Party Man by Prince, which is from the Batman film. So it kind of went full circle with our first episode of the season, and I got excited about watching that. The original score by Thomas Caffey. Do you know him, Robert?
I don't, but I noticed that too. I always stay to the end. I'm sure all our score listeners do.
I looked him up. He's the music supervisor, I think, for the SAG Awards every year, and he does some sports documentaries. He scored the HBO Andre the Giant documentary, which was also really good. Yeah. Of course, I watched Tiger King. I think we all did. I thought it was a little long. It was good, not great for me. It had some moments. I don't know. Did you love it?
I loved it. The only downside for me is I felt like I had to shower after every episode.
The last one I want to talk about, and I may be a little late to the party here, but they're only in season two, What We Do in the Shadows. Have you seen this show?
I know you've been enjoying that.
So we binged all the way through. We're caught up, and season two is coming out now, but it's based on the film that came out in 2014, which we also watched this weekend. Written and directed and starred in by Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords and Taika Waititi, of course, who's just exploding on the scene. But it's super funny. The music of the series on FX is done by Mark Mothersbaugh, so you can expect a lot of it's very animated music. It's really funny and quirky, and it gets creepy at times. And it's basically like a mockumentary about vampires living in Staten Island. It's super funny. So you guys should check that out.
Huh.
Okay, so before we get to our big composer guest this week, these are certainly unprecedented times for film and cinema, and we wanted to go to the experts to get their opinion on where we're headed moving forward. So joining us now, we're so happy to have, he's a legendary film critic and historian, and she's his co-host, partner in crime, and daughter. They're behind the popular Hollywood Film Festival, Malton Fest, and the hosts of the fantastic Malton on Movies podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Please welcome Leonard and Jesse Malton. How are you guys?
Hi.
Good morning.
Jesse, we saw on social media that you had a bout with COVID-19. We hope you're doing well. Can you tell us how you're feeling?
I'm speaking to you from a bubble. I'm not. I like to say that I collect all of the autoimmune diseases. So I have something called mixed connective tissue disease, which leans towards lupus. So I deal with chronic illness and what we call invisible illness year round. So I actually, the hardest part of this was figuring out that something was wrong, because most of the symptoms are things I deal with regularly. But when I got, I had a fever, and that's sort of when we knew it was not just my normal crazy. And yeah, I'm doing fine. My parents are fine. Our dogs are fine. Most importantly, our dogs are fine.
So glad to hear it.
Thank you. Yeah.
So when this whole pandemic first kind of started the ripple effect of canceling events, South by Southwest was kind of the first thing to go. And yes. Of course, you know, even our film Score wouldn't be what it is today without film festivals, without distribution, and these events that allow filmmakers to connect with these distribution companies and things like that. And you guys jumped right into action on social media. Can you tell us about why you felt the need to jump in and how that went? I know that you guys were trying to arrange different screenings and stuff before it really shut down.
Yes. Well, had we known it was all going to shut down, you know,
we might have tried to handle it differently.
Yeah.
Only in the sense that initially we were trying to figure out screenings yeah. and how things were going to get out there.
But we felt at the very least we could help promote the films, tell people that they existed, give them a little background on the filmmakers by interviewing them, and, you know, just beat the drums.
It was also just, honestly, you know, when this happens, you know, your filmmakers, you know, when you submit to a festival and you get in, that's a big deal. And depending on which film festivals you're in, some of them require you to be exclusive. Mm-hmm. And you can only premiere here. You can only do this, do that. And so the idea that this was taken away from them was really heartbreaking. And actually, so my dad's best friend since he was 12 is one of the guys who started South By, Lewis Black, and two sweet boys from Teaneck, New Jersey.
Nice. Shout out to Teaneck.
That's right. And so South By has always been important to us. And then over the years, I've become very close to all of the film people there. And I knew how heartbroken they would be because they, again, a normal human doesn't necessarily know that people who work film festivals, it's a year-round job. Mm. And people like Claudette Godfrey, they are out all year meeting filmmakers, helping them, you know, and Janet Pearson, this is her life. And
screening films for hours and hours and hours.
Around the globe, yeah. Yeah.
But as I say, also just sort of holding the hands of newer filmmakers. And so I just wanted, we wanted to support in any way we could. And so what sort of happened since is something similar where whether it's I'm sending different publicists information about the films or trying to connect people, they just announced that they're going to be showing several of the movies on Amazon. Be a one-time gig kind of a thing. My mom always says that the first people to come forward in crisis are entertainers.
Artists, yeah.
And it is true. And I love that. I love that creative people want to be creative and want to help each other. And even if it's just someone interviewing somebody, like it's beautiful.
I think it's beautiful that you acknowledge that, and it's been wonderful in some ways to be reminded of the explosive creativity that's out there. I mean, of course, we're all watching the internet and seeing every day the incredible parody songs and funny memes. And people have gone to the ends of the earth to be creative and funny. And
because they have to.
Yeah.
We have to. You're right.
That's who they are. And they can't just sit by and twiddle their thumbs.
Of course. And it's a great platform also just to be creative. Leonard, I'm looking at and Jesse, you may have some thoughts on this. I'm looking at a headline in last week's New York Times that says, "The future that Hollywood feared is happening now."
Yeah, I read that.
And it identifies three main areas. If I can just kind of share the three areas, and then I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on it. It says, number one, summer. The blockbuster season evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, fall. Film festivals are in doubt. And of course, we just covered a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. And then winter. Will Oscar season crumble too? Mm-hmm. Since we just talked a little bit about film festivals, I'd love to hear, I read this morning, A major studio will spend up to $300 million on a summer film. What now? So the summer season traditionally starts, it actually, you know, when I was at Fox, sometimes we'd be pushing off of Memorial Day closer into May 15th, May 1st.
Mid-May now is...
So what do we look at this summer?
Well, nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. The problem with, I mean, those three question marks that the New York Times posed in that essay have no definable answers. Yeah. Everybody's got the same question. Mm-hmm. Nobody has answers. All there is speculation. And I mean, Christopher Nolan has said his film will be ready in mid-July and he hopes it can open in mid-July. Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, that requires theaters to be open.
Yeah.
And it requires Warner Brothers to go along with his philosophy, because Warner Brothers can say, okay, we're opening it July, I'm making up a date, 17th. But what if there are only 24 theaters playing it?
Yeah.
And, you know, it has to be a synchronized response. It has to be a consensus response. And right now, for no fault of anybody's, there is no consensus. Cannes Film Festival tried to postpone rather than cancel their festival. They finally gave in mm-hmm. to the inevitable, and they had to cancel it. Mm-hmm. And Thierry Frémaux, the director, said he did not, he wouldn't accept the idea of a virtual festival in place of what they normally do, because it wouldn't have any of the qualities of the festival as people have known it for 75 years. And
you just read Ann Thompson's piece.
Yeah.
Ann is the awards journalist. You know, she's for every festival, every award show, Ann writes yeah. everything up. And she's dedicated, deeply dedicated. And she was just writing about this, saying, you know, perhaps it will be something where there are film festival branded screenings. So she was talking about Telluride might have in New York and LA Telluride branded screenings
For media people.
For media, as opposed to knowing that it's a possibility, we may not be able to get to Telluride.
I'm wondering what you think about the Oscars, because you know we had 2 months of films coming out. You had Emma and The Invisible Man had some good reactions, but like, are those the Oscar contenders?
Not by my family.
Uh-oh. But
my mother, I just have to say, my mother is the real film critic, and when she ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
But I'm wondering, do you foresee that the Academy even holds the Oscars? Do they change the qualifications? Because a lot of these studios are pushing films straight to streaming, which eliminates them on,
right.
you know, the official qualifications.
Right. I think everything at the moment is changing. And I really believe that if anybody tells you they know what's going on, they're lying. You know, the bottom line is that we are all waiting. And I do believe that in general, whether it's a film festival or an award show, whatever it is, I think it's all going to be shifting and everyone is just going to sort of say, let's get through this. You know, I really do. And I think that people are going to find ways to make it work. So whether it's that it doesn't, maybe it's that it has to be streaming for X amount of time, or it has to be sent to all of the
Academy members,
you know,
yeah.
There's a lot of options for what can happen. And the truth is, because we have so much technology, we're very, very lucky that during all of this, we have 7 million ways of speaking to each other, watching something, you know, really, you name it. It's mind blowing. I'm sure you guys have seen, whether it's, John Krasinski's show where the cast of Hamilton performed,
yeah.
you know, all the late night shows are having musical guests on, and the musical guests are bringing in their dancers, and you know, it's incredible. So I feel like the Oscars will happen, if nothing else, because they will want to make sure they happen. You know, they will want to make sure that they say, no, we're not going to be knocked out by this. We're going to figure it out. Maybe there isn't an audience. Maybe it's people backstage coming out. You know, there's a lot of options, but I feel like everybody is in the same boat and people want to have some kind of hope. We were talking about animated films are still being made.
Yeah.
Very carefully.
Yes. And post-production on some big movies is continuing because they've figured out workflow systems where people can work at home and securely and continue to be productive. So films are still being being made in some cases, mostly, you know,
they have
live action films with heavy visual effects components and animated films.
Or films that had finished shooting and are just in the post process.
Leonard, have you seen anything, like what can you compare this to? You've been covering films for a long time. Is there anything close to what we're seeing?
That's an easy question. The answer is no. I mean, you know, what we're going through is truly unprecedented.
Yeah.
And we're all in the same storm-tossed boat. No one is exempt. No one is immune. No industry, no business, no facet of daily life is unaffected.
I just want to come back to one thing that we were just tipping towards, and it was really, in some ways, you've already answered it, which is no one knows. The curious thing, and we're all wondering to see what happens, some of these businesses were already moving towards a precipice of, can they survive? Can bookstores survive with Amazon? Can movie theaters survive if everyone likes staying on their couch? My question is, does this force a crumble in the precipice of the movie business?
I don't think so.
Mm-mm. Oh, good.
Just as, and there is one precedent. Remember in the days following 9/11, people stopped traveling for business and they started, they didn't have Zoom, but you know, there was already something equivalent to FaceTime.
Yep.
And people started saying, have a you know, your video business conferences, don't do it in person. And that lasted for a little while until the, you know, the sense of urgency eventually subsided. So people still want to face each other for real. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, what this experience has done is it's introduced everyone to streaming movies at home and television shows at home. You know, people who hadn't done it yet, who hadn't hopped on that bandwagon yet, have now joined the crowd. But does that mean that the day, the eventual day that Marvel opens its next movie, Black Widow, on a Friday or late Thursday night going into a weekend, that millions of people won't want to go to a theater? And if there's theaters open, all of that. But does that mean they don't want to go out to experience a movie with a crowd of like-minded folks? I don't think so. Does anybody want to stay home 24/7? I don't think so. Now, will that mean it's even tougher for the indie movies to survive? That's been true for 15 years. The theaters that specialize, the theaters that come together for that art house convergence every year before the Sundance Film Festival, to compare notes and to help each other out, as they do, they've been struggling all along and fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
They're just going to have to fight harder.
And the thing is, I mean, as you say with Zoom, we've actually, so our podcast, we have only ever recorded in person with our guests. And
that's for 4 years.
Same. Yeah, that's how we normally do it too.
And that's
yeah.
the thing is that especially we sit with someone for an hour. And, you know, certainly if you don't know the person ahead of time, it's just impossible. And obviously like this would be, we would love to be sitting with you right now. And so, you know, so when it becomes an option, if it is one of those things that 10 people or less, you can bet your bottom dollar I will be in a studio with other people.
Good.
Because that to me is so important. Human connection is so important. In the same way, yes, we've all been in movie theaters when someone's talking. I'm the guy that will walk right up to you and tell you to shut up. I will take your phone and throw it away. I am that person. But, you know, at the same time, I want to see movies in a movie theater. We want to be together for certain things.
Yeah.
There's something special. When you go see Broadway, you know, both my parents are New Yorkers and they started taking me to the theater when I was a kid. And there is nothing, nothing in the world like seeing a Broadway show for real. Same thing when you hear an orchestra, and this was always, my dad always walked me over to the pit. When we'd first get into the theater, he'd walk me down. And then intermission, he'd walk me down. And then at the end of the show, one more time, we'd walk down. And when they'd
we have to talk,
he'd clap. My dad would clap and I would clap. And that's how what we learned. And it was in every way the greatest thing in the world.
Well, I like your optimism. I mean, I think we all need to keep that. And we will come out the other side. And it will be interesting. And last time I checked, we don't have a lot of control over what it's going to be. And we're going to
just going to have to figure it out.
And I think coming full circle, one of the things that will be consistent is the explosion of creativity will continue the way it always does. Artists are artists. Creative people have that instinct. I know that probably everyone on this podcast at this moment has that instinct of just making new things and continuing. It hasn't stopped me one bit.
Well, Jesse, Leonard, best of luck with the future. Of course, you guys have your podcast. Be sure to check that out, all of our listeners. Great show. And also, we forgot to mention, too, that Leonard is in Score. So be sure to check. If you haven't seen Score in a while or you haven't seen it at all, Leonard.
Yeah, right.
Just watch me. In Score.
Score, a film music documentary starring Leonard Maltin.
Exactly.
And oh, by the way, John Williams, Hans Zimmer, Danny Elfman, and some others. Johnny Williams. I love hearing Johnny Williams.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
But thank you.
Just say real quick, this last Friday, April 24th, was Leonard Maltin Day in the city of Los Angeles. This is the third year? So this is the time for us to celebrate.
That's so exciting and so well-deserved. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Stay safe, stay healthy, and we look forward to much more from you guys in the future.
We'll see you at the movies.
As I keep telling people, stay safe and stay sane. Bye-bye, folks.
How cool was that? Leonard Maltin and Jesse coming on the show?
You know, he's the expert. He's the wizard. Hey, and Leonard Maltin Day... I mean, we've got a legend here on Score. Yeah.
We need a Robert Kraft Day around here. What's going on?
You know what? It's funny. They've been asking me. I keep turning them down. I just don't want the parade.
Trying to find the right day, too, right? Yeah, I mean, how do you think?
I'm so busy. I can't find a day, but we'll do it. You know, we just...
Oh, wait a second. We got a piece of mail in the Score mailbox.
Love that wow. sound when something comes in the mailbox. That's awesome.
I need that sound.
It's the noisiest mailbox you've ever heard. Okay, we have our first piece of mail from Score the Mailbox. This is from Samson in Richmond, Virginia, a K-5 music teacher.
Wow.
Love it. Samson writes, for the new season with Danny Elfman, I saw your clip on social media was done through Zoom. You both were muted, but your audio was coming through the video, I believe, while Danny's voice sounds like it was coming from Zoom's audio settings. It looks like all three of you plugged your mics and headphones in your own audio interface. This is kind of a techie, nerdy question. We love these.
Sounds like he's just asking how we set this up.
Yeah, which is a great question. There's also a little side note here. Robert, I had lunch with Chris Caswell back in 2019. His eyes lit up when I talked about Score the Podcast. And he showed yours and his name on the credits of a Muppet Christmas Carol that he had framed in his studio.
My checkered past comes back. Maybe we'll answer these two questions in reverse order. I can tell you that Chris Caswell is a brilliant arranger, orchestrator. He was one of the producers on the soundtrack, The Muppet Christmas Carol, with incredible songs by the legend Paul Williams. We had a beautiful time in London recording the Muppets, and Michael Caine was in the film, and Chris Caswell was just great. So, hey, Chris, if you're listening, I was tempted to do my Miss Piggy imitation, but I'm going to save that. Just say, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Good to talk to you.
That was my best Kermit.
Good.
Okay, so to answer your question, Samson, we're using a number of apps and programs, which I'm so glad that this whole situation is happening in the time that it is, because we have so much great technology. We're using Zoom just to look at each other and to get the video. We don't use any audio of it. We use a great program called Zencastr. It's web-based. It allows us to record everyone separately, and it allows them also to record locally and upload the file to us, so we get the best possible quality in case the internet cuts out or we have a glitch in the audio. Generally, when they send us the file, it's clean. So that's why you're hearing everything so clean. Now, I can't promise that it's always going to sound like that. You know, everyone has different setups, and we're working as best we can to make it sound as good as possible. But luckily, Danny was wearing like his Call of Duty headset, and he sounded great. So he set the bar really high for the rest of the season. So
Kermit, sorry, I'm now. You know, I had it pretty good. I was lucky enough to be next to Frank Oz when he recorded the piggy parts of a Muppet movie, and so
I think it's time for a break, and then
wait. I have more Gonzo. I got a lot for you.
You're done.
Practice off mic. Maybe next week we'll do Robert Kraft does one of his favorite Muppets, whichever one that will be next week.
You just said.
Clifford the drummer.
Oh my goodness! We're gonna
you
take
have
a break when
no
we come
idea.
Back. J.L. Jung joins us, composer of Parasite. We'll be right back.
Hey, Score fans. I'm just wondering if you have a favorite question you've been dying to ask us. You know, you could send it to us in an email. You send it to scorethemailbox@epiclef.com. That's E-P-I-C-L-E-F-F. Come up with a good question. Kenny or I will do our best to answer it. And if we don't know the answer, we may make one up, you know, just to keep the program rolling. Better yet, you could even record the question yourself and attach that to an email. Include your name and your location, and you just might make an appearance on this season of Score the Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Chris Bowers. You're listening to Score the Podcast. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Score the Podcast, presented by Spitfire Audio. We are so happy to have our guest in here today. You know his music from the Oscar-winning Best Picture of 2020, Parasite. He also did the music for Okja and Hemu. Please welcome J.L. Jung.
Hi.
I think that's the first question we have. Thank you very much.
Did I say that right?
Yes. We wanted you to say your name.
Yeah. It's J.L., like jailhouse.
Yes.
Yeah. J.L. Jung.
Robert knows jailhouse, I'm sure.
I do. And jailhouse rock. So you are referred to as J.L.?
Yep.
Okay.
But sometimes it's listed as Jung J.L.
Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, in Korea, the family name comes first.
Yes. So. That's right. What we... Mm-hmm. But I had a moment to speak with J.L. while we were, I say we, editorially, mm-hmm. while you, Kenny, and Carol were setting up.
Yeah, you were sweating it.
I was sweating it. And I asked him if he attended the Academy Awards when Parasite won for Best Picture. And he said, and I love this answer, no, I'm nobody. And I thought, you were nobody.
Yeah.
But at whatever time that was that night, 11 o'clock on the night of the Academy Awards, you mm-hmm. became as popular and successful and interesting to Hollywood and filmmakers everywhere as any composer could be, because suddenly there's a lot of attention on you and your music. Mm-hmm. And I know that I went back and watch Parasite again mm-hmm. to listen to the music.
Wow.
And then listened very carefully to Okja, because mm-hmm.
Yeah, I rewatched that.
Oh, really?
Over the weekend.
I hadn't paid a lot of attention, but there is a lot to talk about in Okja and Parasite with the music. But I think, first of all, Kenny, where should we begin with our esteemed guest?
It'd well, be I want nice to know. I mean, let's catch up to where we're at now, which is you've had an incredible year. You've scored the Best Picture of the first international film to ever win Best Picture at the Oscars. What does that feel like to you, and what does that mean to you?
Well, actually, I've been struggling with my another works. Like, I'm composing pop music, and so I didn't expect anything this success. And well, it's absolutely grateful, but no changes at all.
So you don't feel any different. You're just back to work.
Oh yeah, I have to.
Yes.
To make my life.
Right.
And I'm really proud of Mr. Bong.
Oh, my goodness. Truly amazing.
Does he like to drink like he says he does?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm amazed by a couple things when you say Mr. Bong. First of all, as a filmmaker, it's just incredible to have someone with that kind of imagination,
right,
coupled to that kind of filmmaking skill. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the facets of his imagination is hiring a pop musician that, unless I didn't read all of your biography correctly, before he came to you, had you been interested in or had experience scoring movies?
Well, to be honest, I'm a cinephile, one of cinephiles, but I'm not that interested in composing the score because I had no confidence at all. But one day he just found me. He just came to me.
Do you know how? How he met you or heard you or what someone played him?
He's been liking my compositions.
Yeah.
So he was a fan of you?
I guess so. Mostly pop and some music for exhibitions and related to Korean traditional music. And there was a film called Sea Fog. We call it Hemu. He was the executive director was Mr. Bong. The main director was someone else. And that was the first time I met him. So as a executive producer and film music director.
And did you write, you wrote music for that film?
Yeah.
And can I ask, did you write to picture, in other words, looking at the film and writing music, or did you have music that you gave them and they just put in the movie?
No, I just composed the score only for the film.
Only for the film.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. And after that, did you think, this is my new career, I'm going to compose film? Or did you think, that was fun, I'm going back to pop music?
Well, I think it's like parallel line. I could do both. Okja, the first film that I worked with Mr. Bong as a director, that was the first time I really like our filming, make the score is like this. I really find it interesting. That was the first time I could do a little bit better next time.
When you first saw this film,
how could you find this? Actually, you know what? I really wanted to release this OST.
Yeah, the soundtrack was released.
Hard to find.
We're wizards.
And this cue is unbelievably beautiful.
Thank you so much.
It transcends pop music to be genuine, emotional film music.
Thank you so much.
So, in talking about Okja,
let's tell our listeners what we're listening to.
This is the end credits music mm-hmm. from the film, which is...
Listen to this.
It incorporates the theme of Okja, but it's so beautifully orchestrated.
Recorded in Seoul?
In Budapest.
Budapest.
Wow.
Everybody goes to Budapest.
When you first saw that film,
mm-hmm.
Obviously the Okja wasn't mm-hmm. probably in the picture.
No. Mm-hmm. Actually, I just saw completed Okja in the theater.
Oh, that's amazing.
For the first time?
Yeah.
What did you score? An animation of Okja, or was there nothing?
50% of animation.
We should explain to our listeners also.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Okja, first off, it's on Netflix, and it's a great film. How can I describe it? It's about an American company creating a genetic animal.
Super pig.
A super pig to create a type of meat. But it's the animal is given to farmers around the world to raise it. And a young girl befriends Okja, and it becomes basically her best friend, her, like you would with a dog. And she's unaware of what the ultimate fate of Okja is. And then it's her quest to bring her home, basically. Mm-hmm. But Okja is a massive super pig that's digitally mm-hmm. created.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when you're getting this picture, you're seeing mm-hmm. 50% animation.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to score to an animal that you can't really see or feel?
The surface was not important to me. I just fell in love with the script at the first time.
Mm.
So it was not that hard to see 50% of Okja. I just followed the stories and director's intention.
And wow. Did you, because we're always so curious about the way that the director and the composer
mm-hmm.
relate to each other,
mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of different varieties of that. Does Mr. Bong, mm-hmm. did he come to your studio and sit with you?
Yep.
And were there a lot of people in the room, or was
no,
it
just two? And that's what I really like.
Oh, that's so, that's really rare.
Yeah.
It's,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because I think often if that takes place, which it has to, the mm-hmm. composer and the director, mm-hmm. there's often a producer or a studio executive
uh-huh.
who will come to also make sure it's okay.
Uh-huh.
And so, but I think Mr. Bong has so much respect and independence
mm-hmm.
that I have to imagine what he thinks is okay, everybody says okay.
Right.
And now, mm-hmm. of course, but what was that like? Were you nervous to play him your music?
Sure, every time. Very nervous.
And did he just come and sit down and you would play something and wait mm-hmm. for his response?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did he like everything, something? Did he have lots of notes?
Yeah. He really knows what he wants.
Whew.
And he can say it. He can say it very politely, very gentle, but very straight to the point. And I really liked it, and it was really helpful. Even though he didn't like my composition, but I know what I could do next time.
Mm.
Because he told me very straight to the point.
Is he a musician?
No, but he plays guitar, piano, and he really loves music.
And you play a lot of instruments, right?
Four to five.
What instruments do you play?
Just band instruments, piano, guitar, bass, drums.
Just four to five. I like how
but that's amazing.
I'm on the surface of a guitar here, so four to five is fantastic.
Because we just heard, so you played all those band instruments, and mm-hmm. But we just heard the end title of Okja, and it is a gorgeous arrangement for a string orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Did you write that on a keyboard and someone helps with the arrangements, or did you learn how to arrange for orchestra?
Yeah, I orchestrate everything.
That's incredible, because I believe you went to, we of course did a little research. Did you go to a jazz academy or a conservatory?
Oh, there's a institute called a jazz academy. It's not a university or a college, but I went there for 1 year when I was 13 years old. And unfortunately, I couldn't go to college or university.
Really?
I had no time. I started my professional career when I was 15 years old.
Wow. It's a good problem to have.
Yes, doing pop music.
Yeah, I was in a funk band.
Funky. Original funk or?
Yep.
Yeah.
What did you play?
A bass guitar.
Ooh, that's the bottom of a funk band. And we could have seen you in some kind of K-pop. Mm-hmm. Band,
right.
If things had gone a certain way, correct? Mm-hmm. What was the name of that band?
Oh, I can't put my finger on it. Sorry.
But did you
too think, many things have happened since
did
then.
You think that you would, that was your career path, being a bass player in a band?
For several years, but at some point when I was like, oh, I just released my first solo album in 2003.
Mm.
From that time, I just started my career as a solo artist and composer for for various genres. And the solo album was very far from funk or pop. It was like pseudo Bjork music, electronic, and obviously the orchestral things. So,
is this something you were experimenting with while you were in the band?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you just decided to. Did you leave the band, or did the band break up?
Band break up. Yeah.
Got it.
That happens occasionally with bands.
You know what I love about you is you seem to have all these different tools, and and it seems like you're just, when you have a goal, you just learn, you'll just figure it out. And I feel like that's the underlying story with a lot of successful composers is you have to be able to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
Are you constantly studying different types of music and learning?
Yeah.
'Cause you said you didn't go to college.
No.
So how are you learning all of these things?
By myself. But I was really into classical music and electronic while I was doing the funk band. Mm. It was very great opportunity for me to be in a beautiful band members and doing funk things. But I've been constantly studying those kind of things, orchestral and electronic.
I want to listen to that cue from Okja that has the we thought for a moment that it was either Mexican, like a Mexican kind of or I thought it was maybe from the, like a cue in the movie Borat, which was in Kazakhstan.
Yeah,
but Carol,
it was
actually,
like a it was when Okja was running, right? It was kind of like Running of the Bulls.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We found out that it was a Macedonian trumpet player?
Right.
How did that happen?
His name is Jambo Agushevi.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a cinephile, I really love Balkan films.
Yes.
Such as the director called Emir Kusturica.
Mm.
I really love his films. And He's been using Balkan traditional brass music for a long time. And of course, I've been a huge fan of that kind of music. And for that sequence, the chasing sequence, I have suggested Mr. Bong about Balkan traditional music. So, and Mr. Bong really liked that idea. So I have Googled to find a proper artist, and I found Mr. Jumbo, and I flew to Macedonia.
Wow.
That is incredible. That's just incredible. It's so beautiful of you as an artist to make that effort, not to say, let me see if I can make some fake Balkan music.
With the computer, yeah.
Right, we have a computer with some musicians near me that I can show. But you found the authentic music, and it's just such an effort to fly there to do it. Also amazing that Mr. Bong said, okay, in a Korean movie about a fantasy super pig, I'm okay with some Balkan folk music.
That's amazing.
I was surprised in Okja. Also, I felt like some of the music may be influenced, and it might be just my ears, by a sort of Nino Rota Fellini music.
Wow. You felt that?
Oh, definitely. Was it accidental?
No, no. It was intentional.
Oh, good.
Woo! We tried to imitate Nino Rota and some Macaroni Western.
Definitely.
Fellini.
Robert.
Oh, good.
Nice call.
It also kind of explained the film to me in a way. Mm. And I didn't know if it was your idea or Bong's idea or just accidental, but there's something about Okja that is slightly magic realism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and a cinephile would say Fellini-esque. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not entirely possible that there's an enormous super pig living in the hills of Korea, even though it looks very real. And the music says,
or running through the Seoul tunnels.
Exactly. Or coming to New York City.
Yeah.
But the music says, yeah, sort of, maybe real, maybe not. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is like a Fellini movie. So, and then I tried to figure out how in this movie there could be Macedonian folk music, Fellini music. The beginning cue, if I'm not mistaken, feels like a strummed guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Is that you?
Yep.
And
you remember a lot of things.
Oh, I guess.
He forgets a lot of things.
I forget more than I remember.
Because Robert and I watched it together.
Yes.
And then we talked about the music. Mm-hmm. And then we were like, oh, guitar.
Yeah. And actually, we talked about how the music had so many different, different kinds of expressions.
Right.
So
the film required me to do that. The platform is totally different for each chapter, from Korea to Seoul and New York and somewhere slaughterhouse.
Whew, that was intense.
Intense road movie.
Some cues were not cues at all. Some scenes were silent where a filmmaker who was more uncertain would say, I need music to help here. Mm-hmm. I kept saying to Carol as we watched it, you know how good this movie is? They don't need music right here to tell the story. Mm-hmm. And that's how strong it was. Do you feel that Parasite wasn't as many different kinds of music?
Let's take a quick break and then we'll go into Parasite because we have a lot to ask about Parasite. More with J.L. Jung right after this.
Hey there, fans of Score the Podcast. I'm David W. Collins, creator and host of The Soundtrack Show for iHeartRadio. Like you, I love Score the Podcast. And The Soundtrack Show is the perfect complement if you're passionate about music for film, TV, even video games and theater. Each week, I do a deep dive into some of the greatest scores of all time, as well as some fan favorites, and talk about why the music moves us from a character and story point of view. We also learn fascinating behind-the-scenes stories and share the history and background that brought each piece of music to life. It doesn't matter if you're a musician or not. Music is a language that we all understand. And through our love of movies like Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Back to the Future, or even classics like Casablanca or Psycho, we can gain a deeper appreciation for how composers are speaking to us through music, explaining why we have such a powerful reaction to the images on screen. The Soundtrack Show is available on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Dave Porter, and you are listening to Score, the podcast. And now let's go back to the show.
Welcome back to Score, the podcast presented by Spitfire Audio. We're here with the incredibly multi-talented J.L. Jung. This is the theme from Parasite. And we were just talking about Okja and how there's so many different styles of music utilized in the film. And Parasite is in that same conversation. I mean, there's so many different types of music. In the liner notes of your vinyl, mm-hmm. which we brought here today. Carol, what did it say? The script listed the music as dark but hopeful.
Right. That was the first line of the script.
And as a composer, mm-hmm. that could be a million different things. What was your approach when you first saw that? Or how long did it take for you to work that out?
It took me a lot of time. Because Mr. Bong didn't like my first version, second version, and that was the version 7, I guess.
What we're listening to is version 7.
Yeah. And after the version 6 has rejected, I just felt very... I just drum.
Yeah. Did you feel
a lot?
Did you feel dark but hopeful?
I was just gonna ask that.
And with Hangover, I just composed this version in the morning.
So you got drunk,
yeah,
and then you wrote this Hangover.
No, I just drunk and woke up in the morning with Hangover.
Yes,
and went to the piano. I just play. I just started to play without thinking.
That's the best answer I've ever heard.
Did you call Mr. Bong that day to say, I may have something?
Yeah, sure.
And he heard it and said, we're good?
Yep.
What's your drink of choice there when you're...
Mostly wine.
Wine, okay. Red or white?
I don't care.
Composer tip. Composer tip from J.L. Jung.
Get lit, get hungover. Get a hit.
And write an Academy Award movie score.
We were talking about how there's mm-hmm. different styles of music, and there's obviously the Belt of Faith. I'll just play a little clip of it here.
This could be a movie shot in Versailles.
Yeah.
In the court of Louis XVI.
It's so intense. What was your inspiration for, first off, mm-hmm. it seems like there's really no style mm-hmm. for the score. Mm-hmm. Each scene kind of has its own sound. Mm-hmm. What was your overall approach with the score? What were you trying to accomplish?
Well, when we started, Mr. Bong suggested me to focus on some sound. It could be strings, or it could be percussion. He just suggested me to focus on strings. And we talked about strings, because string can make... full dynamics from piano to fortissimo, and it has you could make various sound effects like clusters, like in pizzicato. So we have decided to focus on strings, and when you say strings, you can imagine the string orchestra. So I decided to begin with the string orchestra. And at that time, he has just decided to, Mr. Bong has just decided to use Handel's arias, some arias. And yeah, from that I come up with the idea of Baroque style. At first, for that sequence, I tried many different things, like which is not Baroque, some pop music style, or just or romantic, some kind of that. And but that was the version 8 or 10, and after 7,
you've had a drink.
Yeah.
Comes back to the wine. Dark and hopeful.
Actually, for this Parasite, Okja was not, but for this film, he really didn't like my first versions.
Wow.
So I had to write.
That's remarkable on every level, particularly to know that he stayed loyal, that he would stay with you, that he had faith.
Yeah, that was really
Were you ever concerned? Were you ever think like maybe I'm not the one for this job after seven, eight?
Every day.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's amazing, 7 or 8 versions. That is a great testament to your ability to keep inventing. I mean, keep trying new things.
I think the most important thing was his patience. Yeah, he really just waited for me. And that's what I'm really grateful. Yeah, there wasn't contract, so I had to make it.
Yeah.
So. You said you're a cinephile. When you saw this film for the first time, did you think it was an Oscar-winning picture? Did you know how good this film was when you saw it?
Well, nobody expected Oscars.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Robert's handling business outside.
Beautiful.
Please continue.
Sorry, going back to my question. Uh-huh. When you first saw Parasite as a cinephile, did you know what you were looking at? Did you know that this was a potential contender for the biggest movie prize in the world?
Well, I think nobody expected the Oscars, but... after the shooting is finished, I got the editing version without music for two hours. There is no music, but usually I feel bored when I get the film edited version without music, but it was totally perfect without music. Really, I felt that at the first time.
I think it's as I was saying, even with Okja, that shows how strong a movie is if without music it works. I'm curious, where was the first time that you saw the movie with music? Was it with a Korean audience?
I don't understand.
Did you see the movie in Korea finished with an audience, with a Korean audience? Or was the first time you saw it outside of Korea? I'll tell you why I ask. Because I wasn't aware until somebody told me there's some humor in there that is very specifically Korean.
Right.
Carol, we talked about the ramen
scene.
Chapaguri.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the translator translated to ramdong.
Ramdon. Ramen and udon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a combination. Yeah. Of those
Korean
two
said it was really brilliant translation.
Mm. Wow. And when you land at Seoul Airport now, when you go back, you're in Los Angeles this week. Will there be paparazzi waiting for you?
Are you a rock star?
Yes,
now?
No,
are you like
so.
Are you like BTS?
Oh, no.
Not yet.
Not at all.
I imagine Mr. Bong is a rock star now.
Yeah. He's a hero now.
Yes, he must be. And
have you been back since the Oscars?
No.
No, so this is your first time going home.
Ah, after Oscar.
Yeah.
He didn't come here for the Oscars.
But were you in Korea when the...
So I was doing my things.
So what was it like to be in Korea and seeing this news and seeing Mr. Bong on the stage accepting these Oscars?
Well, to be honest, I was in... Well, my mother was sick. I was in the hospital. And I just got the news from news with my text. And to be honest, I still don't feel it was real. And the same thing happened in Cannes last year.
Yes, it won the Palme d'Or.
Yeah. At that time, I was in London mixing in the studio. And is this happening? Is this happened? Mm. That was the first feeling.
So you're in Los Angeles now today for how long?
By Sunday.
Sunday. And I know we've talked about this a little bit before our podcast, but... Are you starting to look at buying a big house on the beach in Los Angeles?
I feel like you're going to be making a lot more trips here.
Malibu, Santa Monica.
Well, yeah, I would like to walk around. Mm. Well, this is the second time to LA.
Amazing.
First time was the... concert. I had a concert.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's
I was
right.
there.
Carol went. And so, Carol, tell us a little bit about what you saw. And did you have any questions about the concert?
Yeah. So, I believe it was a live two picture concert right. of Parasite. And Yale here conducted while playing the piano. He conducted an orchestra. He was also playing the musical saw. He's playing guitar. He was singing. Doing all sorts
of
things.
And the saw, is that the one from the Is It Sunday Morning cue?
Is it? Yeah.
Right. This one here.
I was...
You'll hear it. It's that... Woo!
That was better.
Thank you.
We should sample that.
I thought it was a theremin.
Oh, yeah. Many people will think that.
All right, how do you learn how to play the saw?
Carefully.
There's a film called Delicatessen.
Delicatessen.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Robert
beautiful
knows movie. All about Delicatessen.
Yes. And I know expert. That movie.
Yeah. There's a sequence of the playing cello and musical saw together. I found it really beautiful. Mm. So I've searched a teacher. But there was no teacher. And when I was watching the TV, one grandfather came out and played the saw. Oh, there's a teacher. So I just called the broadcasting station, found the PD, and got his number.
The most resourceful composer we have ever had on Score the Podcast. If he needs to find something, JL will find it either in Macedonia or a grandfather playing saw. Did you bring your own saw to the Ace Hotel?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That sure. was you.
I was really scared during the immigration.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do you travel with a saw?
Oh, God.
Did they ask, what is this saw for?
Actually, fortunately, they didn't ask me anything.
That is a great, there's a movie right there. A composer bringing a saw in.
Because what are you supposed to do? Go to Home Depot? You guys have any musical saws? I got a concert.
So how was the show, Carol?
Oh, it was great. And you were really, JL was really natural at it. And I was wondering if that was like your first experience of conducting your own music while playing mm-hmm. the piano.
Well, I conduct piano. I conduct orchestra every time. Mm-hmm. But live to picture was the first time.
Yeah.
The click?
Yeah, click. So I had to make all clicks, even though it's a rubato.
Yeah.
I had to make clicks.
I was wondering about that.
It was really hard. And that was the most hard thing.
And it wasn't just clips. It was the entire film with an intermission. So that's what, you know, I was really surprised by how well it worked.
It's if people don't know what we're talking about, when you do something live to picture like that, it's the same thing as being on a soundstage. You have to, the musicians have to hear a click to stay on on beat on the scene, because these notes have to hit where they're supposed to hit, and without that click, you can't look at the screen and know what's happening.
Right.
And if it's rubato, which means it's not in a defined tempo, mm-hmm. and it slows down or speeds up, constructing a click mm-hmm. is really a challenge, because you don't know where the next click is. It's not like it's, and we all know what's going to come next.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious who your musicians were. Same. Did you practice, yeah. or was this an orchestra from LA that you?
Yeah, Hollywood Chamber Orchestra. Nice. They just invited me to do that.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, they were really incredible.
How big a band?
Just chamber size, like 32 musicians, I guess, approximately.
And could they play every cue? Did you have the right instruments for all mm-hmm. the cues in yeah. Parasite? Mm-hmm.
Is this something you want to keep doing? Had you ever done that before?
No.
And have you done any since then?
Have you done?
Are you planning to do any more?
Another concert.
Uh-huh. Live two picture.
I don't know.
We would like you to do one.
Yes, please.
Just for us. Score the Podcast presents.
We'll find all the information. We'll dig it up.
I think that's a wonderful. I think we should do another one. Parasite
Actually, I
Live.
Didn't expect it's working. Mm. I can be on the stage. I was thought.
Yes. Oh, so
during preparing the clicks.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if maybe in the future mm-hmm. we could do a film music concert with you, but we could have your funk band open the show. So the first act is the funky JLs and you play your funk band. Then there's an intermission. You go off stage.
Robert Kraft and the Funky Jails.
There you go.
And then we have Parasite, the score. And you have to come back in like a tuxedo.
All right.
First one is like kind of cool contemporary clothes. And man, the future is so bright. I can't wait to hear. Do you have your next project?
Is Mr. Bong already hard at work on a script? Are you guys going to work together again? Do you hope? Do you know?
Nothing's fixed.
So how do you keep busy these days? When you go back on Sunday, mm-hmm. do you go right back into a project? Or?
Yeah, I have some performances to compose for modern dance. One is for modern dance and mm-hmm. one is for theater mm-hmm. called Macbeth.
Macbeth. I know Macbeth.
Yeah.
And there will be original music in a performance of Macbeth, mm-hmm. only in soul?
Yeah.
And do you have any pop acts?
Yeah, we didn't really even touch on you work mm-hmm. with a lot of big Korean pop stars.
Mm-hmm. We know the song Wildflower by Park Joel
Shin. How do you know it?
Well,
Robert's actually been, that's his ringtone on his phone.
It's a big hit.
Yeah, only in Korea.
So far, do you have any other recording projects coming up with pop stars?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Not yet.
Maybe a BTS collaboration?
Yeah.
Oh, they are so huge. Mm.
So are you.
No.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
You are.
I think you need to write the strings for the next BTS single.
Yeah, I would love to.
Good. I'm going to talk to them about it. I don't know them, but I will find them. And I'm going to do what you do.
Tweet them.
I'm just going to
try.
They
only have like 80 million, right. 800 million, something like that.
I would like to introduce you to the fabulous JL Jung, and he is going to work with you on your next record. Thank you.
Thank you.
So currently, no projects in the works, but are you itching to get back into film scoring?
Sure, somebody... If somebody needs me,
would you be interested in scoring an American film?
Sure, somebody needs me. And if the script is beautiful.
Oh, that's so good.
I love it.
And that's so important. I think that's a great, great thing to remember as we move on, which is that if you pick beautiful scripts, mm-hmm. of course, the movie is beautiful, the music is beautiful, and your reputation stay up here instead of what we sometimes see, which is composers understandably take the next job that's offered because they need to. And then they have some good movies and some stinkers. And that's difficult. It's all understandable to me because you have to work. But if you're lucky enough to just pick projects that you love, your music will always be music you care about.
Lovely.
So,
and I have one last question for you. As a cinephile, what is your favorite movie? And do you have a director that you would love to work with? Have you ever thought about that? Because you're now in that pool.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
Please.
There's a film which I think is the masterpiece of the century. It's called Revenant.
Wow.
Even for the score by Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Iñárritu?
Ryuichi?
Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Yes.
Mister.
Yes.
Well, we'll send him a note. We're going to send him this clip right now.
That's amazing and great taste. And now I want to go back and see it again.
Leonardo DiCaprio, the bear fight.
Right.
He climbs inside the bear to keep warm. It's really incredible. That's a wonderful film to pick. Really beautiful.
That was the Leo snub, right?
I think
Oh, wait. No, he won.
He won. Best, he finally best actor. Won for that. That's what it was.
He at the Oscars, he won. That's his first Oscar win.
And I think the bear was nominated for best supporting actor in a comedy.
In a cocoon.
In a cocoon. But
sort of way.
How wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
J.L.
Jung, thank you so much for coming on the show. Obviously, we know you traveled to the United States just for this, and we really appreciate that.
That is so nice of you. And I do know that the next time we call you to be on Score, you will, I'm sure, say, you know, I'm just too busy because I have to, I'm up for an Academy Award and a Golden Globe and I'm the Grammys and BTS is like keeping me in the studio all the time and Ridley Scott and Steven Spielberg are just blowing up my phone. So what a wonderful, wonderful morning.
So make sure to watch Okja on Netflix and Parasite. If you're under a rock and you haven't lived in the last year, Parasite is the Oscar-winning film. J.L. Jung, thank you so much for coming on Score the Podcast.
Thank
best
so
of luck with everything
me.
And safe Jingu. Travels home.
Chingu!
Kamsamida.
Kamsamida.
And reminder to our listeners, rate and review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Twitter at Score the Podcast, Instagram at Score Movie, Facebook, Score a Film Music Documentary, and stick around after the show. We have a clip from Spitfire Audio to show you how you can elevate your music. Robert.
Thank you so much, Kenny, and what an exciting morning. I've learned so much from a great artist and a great composer. We will see you again. Hey, Score listeners. We are so grateful for the support of Spitfire. Spitfire Audio collaborates with people like Hans Zimmer and the Bernard Herrmann Estate to build sample libraries that elevate your music. You're about to hear a musical demo of what that sounds like.
And then again, as an exclusive to Score listeners, Spitfire Audio is offering 20% off your first order. That's good on over 50 of their libraries.
Yep, go to spitfireaudio.com and enter promo code SCORE2020 so they know we sent you. Who sent you?
Score we sent
podcast
you.
And sent me.
check out this clip right now from the Bernard Herrmann Composer Toolkit from Spitfire Audio.
Bleep, bleep, bleep. Listen to it in the shower.
All right, reminder, use the promo code SCORE2020, save 20% off your first order.